This Rich Eisen Show podcast is sponsored by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and maybe even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Seasons change. Why not your tech? Upgrade now during the Dell Technologies Summer Sale event and save on select PCs like the XPS 16 powered by Intel Core processors. You'll be able to bring your most intensive projects to life with built-in AI, minimalistic design, immersive visuals, and cinematic audio. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to exceptional tech and electronics, plus free shipping on everything. Amazing prices await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
First up for you, Anthony Michael Hall, celebrity true or false.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
You try to sneak onto the vacation set just to watch Beverly D'Angelo's nude scene.
Guilty as charged. Miss D'Angelo was topless and I was 14 and I was on set somehow. Just bird dogging from a corner.
Earlier on the show, ESPN NBA reporter Brian Windhorst, MLB Network analyst Kevin Millar. Coming up, author and actor Michael Richards. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
All right, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show third hour. We've had a fun first 2 hours of this program talking about where Aaron Rodgers is, and we still don't know. We came on the air 2 hours ago, and the guy is supposed to be at mandatory minicamp, but apparently he told the Jets he wasn't coming at the top of OTAs, which would be a couple weeks ago, when the Jets announced today, I imagine knowing this was coming, hoping that I guess he would change his mind to not go wherever he is going. Can't be here at the mandatory minicamp after being at every single possible event for the Jets in the offseason. But the Jets are calling it an inexcused absence. We still don't know where he is, right?
No clue. Nobody knows.
All right. Keep an eye on all of that.
Yep.
We're keeping an eye out for Michael Richards, his new book, Entrances and Exits. He's slated to be here in this hour. He's making his way through traffic right now. We'll keep an eye on that. And I'll give the weather on the twos as well right here on the Rich Eisen Show. We had in hour number one, Brian Windhorst discussing the Lakers' pursuit of Dan Hurley that fell short. And what they're going to do next. Hour number two, Kevin Millar talking a little bit of ball. If you missed any of it, don't worry. We've got you covered right here on the Rich Eisen Show, channel 210, the Roku channel. We re-air as soon as this program is over, all the way to tomorrow's program, when we'll be back on the air from 12 to 3 Eastern time. We say hello to everybody listening to us on terrestrial radio, Sirius XM, Odyssey, and more, and to our podcast listeners as well. The Overreaction Monday podcast, latest edition of it. We recorded it on Monday, and it's up where everybody can have their podcasts to take in. We didn't discuss this yesterday because we got stuck talking a lot of football on this program, and the NBA final game two, and Caitlin Clark being left off of the women's national team roster. By the way, that became official today. The roster got announced. We'll keep an eye on for any possibility of Caitlin Clark to be an alternative selection on that front. But we kind of got waylaid, and we didn't discuss it. We don't talk too much tennis around here, but Carlos Alcaraz took care of business in the French Open in Roland Garros. And he's now got that title to go along with his U.S. Open victory and his Wimbledon victory of his career. And he is going to set the record of the youngest player to come up with a career Grand Slam if he wins the Australian Open in any of the next 3 years.
Wow.
That's how good he is at such a good. He's got three bites at it? The apple.
Wow.
The 2025, 2026, or 2027 Australian Open. If he wins any of those three, he'll be the youngest to have a career Grand Slam.
He's what, 21 now?
He's a youngster.
Now, could you get a point off of him?
And that's the guy. And speaking of being young, this was
just turned 21.
Carlos Alcaraz as a teenager talking about what he wants to become in life.
Nombre?
Carlos Alcaraz.
Edad?
12 años.
¿Cuál sería tu sueño como
What is your dream if you become a pro?
Ganar Roland Garros y Wimbledon.
¿Cuál es tu jugador favorito o tu ídolo?
Roger Federer.
Talks about Federer beating his idol and wanting to win Roland Garros.
His dream to win
and Wimbledon,
win
and he's now done it. And this is why, just seeing that young boy talk about what he wants to do in life, and he achieves it by age 21, and in the process of doing it, becoming such a major figure in the current world of young tennis fans. Did you see this video from Roland Garros as he's winning, and all these kids, the ball kids, and he's sitting amongst the ball kids and how happy they are?
That's awesome.
As he's got the trophy sitting next to him on his lap, and they're all touching it, and look how he looks like the 12-year-old amongst other 12-year-olds. It kind of got me, obviously, as a dad of a 15 and a 13 and a 10, and our kids are all into tennis. And,
wow.
You know, it just led me to believe, seeing all this again, that deep down, and it's a great sport for kids to play and learn. And, you know, it's such a mental game to try. It's just you out there. You're the only one who can get you out of the jam. You're the only one who's possibly going to get you into the jam and all of that stuff. And it's such a human game. You can mess with people's heads and your head gets messed with. It's really remarkable, and knowing that caused me to believe deep down, I still think I can get a point off of this guy. Made me think again. Let me say something to you guys.
It's not a lie if you believe it.
Let me just say this.
Didn't Nick Kyrgios say you're insane or something?
Oh, yeah. He said something along the lines of him, you know, coming and he'd streak naked or something crazy like that. But he's also, you know, a little bit off his rocker,
sure,
as we know.
Sure.
Listen, guys.
Listen.
I saw him. I saw what he's playing. But Coop right now.
Coop Tani.
Is, you know, age 13 and really getting into tennis particularly. And we, down the street from us in our neighborhood, kid named Johnny Yaffe, former Michigan tennis captain.
Captain.
Of the Michigan tennis team.
Okay.
Okay. A champion player of his own right, has been kind of helping Coop get his mental game right. You know, 13-year-old kid sometimes will play down an opponent or is trying to be too nice out there. We're trying to get our son to, you know, curb stomp some people. Johnny's helped out, and I told Johnny this theory. He laughed initially, but then told me that he thinks that if I, because double faults, are we removing double faults from this or not? You know, are we removing double faults from this?
I would say no. Okay. Yes, remove that.
Remove that. Okay, so I have to get a point off the guy.
Either he has to hit it in the net or wide or
right,
long.
Yeah, an unforced error on his part.
Or
I get
deliver
a point
a winner.
Right, on my serve. Right. And so, hear me out. He says that it's entirely possible that if I keep on serving long, over and over and over again throughout this entire match,
you could drop one,
that I could get him far enough back, even though I'm not hitting it very fast, far enough back that if I just quickly underhand one over, he wouldn't be able to get to it.
So you want to like go the cheap route to get it. This is like bunting in a no-hitter.
Yeah, correct. But if I do that in the process, hear me out. If I do this in the process of getting it over the net just enough, uh-huh. surprise him.
Uh-huh.
And I get it in the box just over the net and he can't get it.
Yeah.
And I practice this, okay?
Okay.
We talking practice?
That in the process of keeping on hitting it long over the over a set or two, this is a three, this is a five setter, okay? Hear
three,
me out.
Three sets.
He says that if
if
I serve it long and hit him on the fly with the tennis ball, it's my point. If I hit Carlos Alcaraz with a serve on the fly, it hits his body.
Oh, right, 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 right.
It's technically my point.
Because
so,
that would be him. It would be right. I understand.
So.
So you're practicing hitting him long?
I'm hitting him. I practice hitting it long.
And at him.
And practice hitting it short. Enough times while getting in shape a little bit better.
I mean,
my stamina, work on my stamina. I can get a point off of him.
I realize they say practice makes perfect. I don't know when that would be the case.
Is this
case
like the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours? You're really working on this for that long to get the...
And by the way, how old is your friend's, Coop's friend? How old is he?
He's a recent graduate. Okay. By the way, of the University of Michigan, the finest institution of higher learning in the world where you know things.
Well,
you know things. He's a smart. What do you mean I'm buried to lead? I said he's on the Michigan. You might have heard he's the tennis captain of the Michigan tennis team.
Okay. Michigan guys, you all stick together. And
No. It's not that. No, he knows the rule book.
I don't know that you get a point off a 12-year-old Alcatraz who was in that video.
Alcatraz.
Alcaraz, Alcatraz.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Who gives a?
It doesn't matter.
As soon as I said that, I was like, oh. 12-year-old him. You couldn't
serve it. Serve it long. Serve it long.
He's just like, this guy
can't get in a serve.
Right. And then he's just kind of like standing.
Sort of like Larry David, you know, talking about. You know, his double flick or his misdirection, you know, going away. Oh, I'm going this way.
Yeah.
And off he goes. You touchdown.
Double flea flicker.
Yeah.
And you're hoping that what? Alcaraz is just kind of like.
Alcatraz, bro.
This guy, what are we doing? And he's just kind of like, all right, I'm just going to stand here.
Yeah. Like by the third set, he's like, I got this thing. Why am I wasting my time? Who got me involved in this thing?
Right. Why am I doing this?
What is happening
again?
Right here?
What time is lunch?
You know, after a while, this is really. I'm bored.
And then you just kind of boop.
Right over the net, can't get it.
Spin? Is there spin on it?
Sure. Because I've worked on it.
Hard court, clay court, what's the surface?
Now that's another question.
Are we in Roland Garros?
I think you want clay.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Slower.
He can slide. If he's got to get there, he can slide into it.
That's true.
I don't need an extra. I don't need him getting an extra few, extra foot.
I think we just got to
go. Because he can slide. He can get the splits.
Okay,
he can use the splits to get to my short serve.
Okay, we're talking this out. Hard court, a little spin grabs it a little bit more. And
I think so. Because grass, you can slide on it too.
Right.
Plus, you know, I know right now, grass is not my best surface.
And what if he says,
as you can see with my 40-yard dash, I'm a turf guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, we need to run this by Kyrgios again. Let's run this new scenario. If we can get Kyrgios back, maybe just send him a text so he can record a video we could play back and you can run the scenario by him. I need a professional's input here.
Chris, we could run this by Stevie Wonder and the answer would still be this guy.
The thing is, I want to believe in you. I want to believe in you.
No, you don't.
But
that's the thing.
I mean, it's pretty preposterous. The new strategy, though, now you have a plan of attack. See, before you were just like,
relying
on physical
talent.
Yeah, it was like,
it was not going to work.
Now you have an actual plan.
Yes, I do.
From an actual player.
Yes.
With, a college player. I'm looking up, Michigan was in the top 30 this year.
Dude, he's really good.
And he was their captain, so I assume he's the number one. But let's run this by a couple of pros and see what they think.
So I practice hitting it long.
Long.
But the thing is, while I'm practicing hitting it long, I'm practicing hitting somebody.
Right. Like you got to set up like a cardboard cutout of someone on the baseline.
Yes.
And then you're just like aiming it right.
And then
right
spend
at
an
it.
Entire week coming up with the surprise dink. The surprise dink.
Cardboard cutout. He's got three kids to stand there. Like,
oh, I don't want my children.
Taylor doesn't want to stand there and take one off the dome, you know?
Yeah, they got stuff to do.
What else?
Yeah.
They don't have anything better than helping
Plus,
with
no, I mean, you got to have, I mean, Carlos won't know what's hit him.
No, because
except the tennis ball.
Especially if he's just like, who is this guy?
Who is this guy? You get him bored.
And then he,
you get him
totally
bored, wondering what happened.
His hands are down.
Why did my manager get me involved? Like, who is this guy?
Like, how much are we making for this?
Does he even speak Spanish?
And then
And
then all of a sudden, whoa.
Am I getting punked?
And I get and I get my point.
That's a joke. Okay.
You're ambitious. I'll give you that.
I'm like 5% there with you.
So honestly, to be straight up with y'all, I was seeing these videos, seeing him as a kid, seeing him with these kids, watching him play, totally inspired, loving the guy. Can't believe he's got three chances at winning the Australian Open to become the youngest player ever to have a career Grand Slam under his belt on his resume. And I'm sitting there, and at some point, I thought to myself, I could still get a point off him. And I said it out loud, and Johnny Yaffe's like, I got your plan.
Well, that's the first part, Rich. You've got to believe it.
That's what I mean.
You don't believe it.
We needed a plan.
Go blue.
We needed a plan, and now you got it.
And it's, as you said, it's not a lie.
if you believe it.
If you believe it.
I love it when a good plan comes together.
It's not a lie. If you believe it.
So, as you know, we've got tons of Seinfeld drops here. We had Jerry here just last month. So we're thrilled, sitting in our green room, getting ready to come out, is Michael Richards, the man who played Kramer and brought him to life and won 3 Emmy Awards in the process. His new book, Entrances and Exits, he's about to enter our studio.
Let's go.
So that's next. He's next. This is the Rich Eisen Show. Are you struggling to close deals? Business-to-business selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/direct. That is linkedin.com/direct for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/direct and get started. Man, the Hoops Finals are right around the corner. How cool would it be to go to one of those games? You might even be thinking that right now. And if you are, I've got the solution for you. Game Time makes getting finals tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to tip-off. You get killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, meaning no surprises on the final cost. Views from your seat, which means no surprises on your view of the court. The lowest price guarantees also there from Game Time, which takes the guesswork completely out of buying basketball tickets, certainly when it's the biggest event around for hoops, the finals. Take the guesswork straight out. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code RICH, and you get $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Visit GameTime.co for restrictions. Again, create an account and redeem my code RICH, and you get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. We're back here on the Rich Eisen Show on the Roku channel. Our radio audience will join us again. And we just talked about how I think I can get a point off Carlos Alcaraz. So who better to ask if I can do that than a former ball boy at the United States Open?
Yeah.
The great Michael Richards is here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I love your confidence. I mean, we all need confidence. And boy, you got it. 1 point, you go around with that every day now.
Every
day. I know I could make 1 point. I know I can make 2 3-pointers in a row playing basketball against the best.
Exactly. That would be, yes. Could you imagine the confidence I would have walking around if the guy who just won the French Open, we're already with a Wimbledon and a U.S. Open on his resume, that if I got 1 point off of him, look out for me.
Gosh. Yeah. That's something to strive for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like he would, if just to continue the references, he would treat me like you would treat a 12-year-old judo kid, from back in the day.
I don't know. It's way above my pay grade.
You didn't actually take on kids in jiu-jitsu, right?
And no, when
you
were I on took the set. On kids, though. You know, I am the best dad ever. I love that right there.
Do you like this
best.
Right here?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're going to come, cool. if you're going to come for the crown, you best not miss. Is all I'm saying. I don't usually get aggressive with my guests, you know, Michael. But
do so. Let's just get to it. Come on, don't patty cake around me.
Oh man, here's the book. It's called Entrances and Exits. The foreword by Jerry Seinfeld. It is available where all books are sold. It is chock full of stories from out your entire life and your career. And it's as I mentioned, where all books can be acquired. Michael Richards here on the Rich Eisen Show. Our radio audience is just about to rejoin us, and then we get the whole big schmear right here on the Rich Eisen Show, back on our Rich Eisen Show radio network. Michael Richards is here. Entrances and Exits, where all books can be acquired. And it's great to see you here, sir.
Oh, thanks,
truly.
Rich. Thank you.
Yeah, we just had Jerry Seinfeld in that very chair a few weeks ago.
And Larry David.
That's so right. Larry's been here before. Yeah. You met Larry before Jerry, or no?
Yeah.
Chronologically.
Yeah,
in your
I
life.
Worked with Larry on a sketch comedy show called Fridays.
I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's also a moment in this book that you recount quite a bit from Fridays with Andy Kaufman.
Indeed, when Andy and I came up with that, the breakout sketch, no one will know, live on television. Yeah, that was an event for sure.
So just jumping into that right here. So you came up with Andy Kaufman coming up with a skit where he refuses to say his lines. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. He's going to not say his lines. I knew he was going to go out. I didn't know where, but he was going to break out of the sketch. Yeah.
So you went into this knowing he was going to have a sketch, and you just didn't know when he was going to stop doing it.
I just didn't know when he was going to do it. And at the beginning of that sketch, he's not saying all of his lines. So I don't know, is he going out now? I wasn't sure. I had to watch him very closely.
Right.
It sort of pulled me out of the scene. If you watch it, I'm not really quite in that scene. I'm watching Andy very carefully.
Right.
I was young. If we did it all over again, I would have played it cooler, I think.
So
a little more at ease.
And at one point, you did you ad-lib the rest of it yourself?
Oh, yeah. Then it went crazy.
So what happened after he stopped doing his lines?
You know, it was really great because after, and we cut out and went to commercial, Andy was backstage crying. Crying. He had tears. He's really playing this all out. Mm-hmm. He's such a trickster. But I was so impressed that he could bring tears and apologize to everybody, saying, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't know why I broke out of the sketch. And it was, and everyone's, the crew and everyone is so angry at him. And Andy is just playing it so beautifully. Tears and all. What an actor. What a fine actor.
So you're saying you come up with this bit or skit where he plays a guy who's playing himself, who purposefully refuses to read his lines, then you would bust out the cue cards and bring it to him?
Yeah, I threw the cue cards in front of him. Now, the rest of the cast didn't know this was happening, of course. They're in the sketch trying to do this live in front of the country, you know? And I knew Andy was going to break out of the sketch, and then we were going to have to take it from there.
And you didn't know that like a damn near brawl was going to break out on the set?
Yeah, the brawl was interesting. How protective that crew was. Is your crew that protective? I did something right now. Would they just jump on me and beat me up on the carpet? That's devotion.
Probably that guy, maybe?
I would ask Jay to be the first one in.
Right.
The rest of you guys could just stay put.
I got work to do.
But I just find it fascinating that he kept the persona, the bit going.
Well, he came back on the show a few weeks later. Now he had converted himself to Christianity and wanted to sing Christian songs to redeem himself for what he had done. I thought that was rather clever, too.
Wow.
Yeah, that's commitment to this whole comedic persona that is indeed Andy Kaufman.
Well, it's interesting that you would say that, because I always thought, watching you as Kramer, that you were committed deeply.
Oh, possessed.
Every single sec. Honestly, like, I thought that you being Kramer, and the way that you controlled your body, and the way that you delivered your lines, and the way that you went about your business, you became that guy.
Indeed. That's how far I go. Yeah.
Did you ever meet the real Cosmo?
Yeah, I met Kenny. We hung out a few times. Nothing like the kind of Kramer I created, but I had to push it for comedic reasons, you know. Yeah.
So that was not the real guy, is what you're saying, at all?
Oh, no. No. When I started out and they were casting, Larry was still close to Kenny Kramer, mm-hmm. as he visualized the Kramer character.
Yes.
And he suggested I wear a ponytail, because Kenny wore a ponytail.
Yes.
I broke that off quickly as I started to get into Cosmo Kramer.
Right. Okay. So that was your first order of business, was not to go with the ponytail?
I didn't want to have to... Well, I couldn't grow it out in time, and I didn't want to wear a fake one, although I consider, a fake one, it could fall off at times,
yes.
maybe, and we see that it's fake, and he's very concerned about this fake ponytail, you know, but it falls off, and he has to stick it in his pocket, and that's an interesting cover. That could lead to comedy, but I ditched that idea and just decided to go into something more personal.
Yes, which is just growing up.
I pulled the hair, put some gunk in there, and let that fly.
Okay. When did you know that you got the role? I mean, because Larry reached out to you, I imagine, through your relationship with Fridays, right?
Like, well, so when did you know that I could make a character? Yeah,
right.
Make characters, eccentric characters. They wanted an eccentric next door neighbor,
right?
So I had to deliver, and Larry knew I was. Mm-hmm, yeah, I had to audition for this part three times.
You did?
Yeah, they really put me through the hoops.
So when did you know you got it?
I knew it. I mean, probably the second audition. I just felt, the chemistry with Jerry, and I was making the room laugh. So I knew I was close. When I knew I had the characters, when I used to enter and get an applause from the audience, that's when I knew, okay, I got the character. Now we can continue, but not fret too much about whether or not I'm getting too cartoonish or too caricatured, so forth, because everybody was playing so beautifully close to themselves.
Yes.
And I had to manufacture a voice, and I had mannerisms and tics and movements, the way I would swing through the door. There's a lot of little things about this character that had to be invented.
Yeah, and then just the way that you would play him, Michael Richards, I gotta be honest with you, I'll tell you what my favorite speech of yours is that I see all the time that is brilliant was you telling Jerry how if he gets married that he will lose all sense of himself, and that you sit down and you can't watch TV while you're eating, that's out.
Yeah,
you have to talk about your day. That speech is absolutely brilliant. I can't get enough of that.
Oh, good.
You know.
Yeah, that really shows how individuated Kramer was. He didn't have a relationship going at all, really.
Right.
Marriage.
But you have to talk about your day and how was your day today. And so when you read that script, how do you come up with?
Well, I was single at the time. You know, so I could kind of relate to that. I just come out of a marriage, too.
Right.
And I was brokenhearted from all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I could kind of do have some personal connection to that. But ultimately, I'm all for marriage. So,
oh, of course.
Yeah.
But it does speak quite a bit in just the way that you actually use your voice and describe it. It's brilliant. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
You're Thanks, very welcome.
Rich. Thank you.
So what is your favorite Kramer moment? If you have one.
When I'm into the physical comedy.
Just anything.
Anything that's physical. I liked it when I used to get in brawls with Little Mickey. And I would always tell, Danny, now really hit me, really hit me. You got to really hit me. And he could never really hit me. He was such a nice guy. I said, hit me. The harder you hit me, the funnier it'll be. Nope, he would not. So we used to wrestle and get into fights. And he always beat Kramer up. I love that. Having Kramer think that he could take Mickey. And here's little Mickey just knocking him about. You know, it's just so good.
Did you ever get hurt?
No, I was well padded.
What do you mean? What do you mean you were all padded?
I had elbow pads, knee pads.
Did you really?
Always. I took all that very, very seriously. Red Skelton was a mentor of mine, and he wrecked his knees. I met him when he was when he just turned 80, mm-hmm. and he told me, I messed my knees up with all the pratfalls I did. I said, oh, they didn't have all that gear then. He used to stuff paper and things down his pants.
But
today, back then, you know, in the 90s, it was a great... great gear you could get to protect yourself, sport gear, things like that. I was into it.
So you would show up on the set. So when I'm watching an episode, you got an elbow pad on, you got knee pads on.
I didn't tell anybody. Hey, look,
I know
I had it on. I knew if I'm going to take a bump off that wall or the corner of that couch, or I'm going to go over that chair. Yeah, I'm gonna be padded up for it.
Wow. I did not know that. So what episode is one of your favorites that you point out like that? That's a Kramer moment that you're most proud of.
We were talking about Mickey a moment ago. He loses his temper and charges at me and throws his whole body on me, and I got to go off of a crate I was sitting on,
mm-hmm.
about this high off the floor. I'm going to take it with his weight on me.
Yes.
My back is going to hit that floor.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a piece of metal made so that I could wear it and it would protect my spine. And when I hit that floor, yeah. Otherwise, you know, I don't know if I'd be around.
Writing your book, yeah. Entrances and Exits. Michael Richards here on The Rich Eisen Show. We had Jerry here, as I mentioned, just last month. He told his story. He said he hadn't really told much of publicly about the famed "The Sea Was Angry, My Friend" speech that Jason Alexander read off.
Oh, yes.
That you had the button on, one of the famous buttons in the history of the show. And he said that they came up with that idea the night before. And I'm wondering what your perspective of that story, your memory of that.
I mean, Jason delivers that so beautifully, and I get the button. Okay, yeah, sure. Okay, that's wonderful. But we're working together. That's all timing. I don't know. I mean, we came up with things last minute all the time. And I was improvising when I bring physical comedy. Lots of things that weren't there at rehearsal time would come up along the way. That was just so magical. When you'd have that moment. I remember a time we, in the parking garage, where the car was supposed to start up, we were going to drive, and the blow line, it's Kramer, he says, where are we now? And they're just going around in circle, lost in the parking garage. Mm. Well, that car didn't start up. During the shoot, it didn't start up for us to drive away. So it's just left with a... and that's the perfect ending. Out of a mistake, but something that came up last minute that works better than what was originally in the script.
So that moment at the end of that episode was supposed to be the car starts and
we drive off. And then it's, where are we now? Because we're lost, right. All of us in the parking garage. It's if you know the episode.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I know every one of them.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But that's an episode where that car didn't start and it just worked.
Wow.
I did not know that one. I mean... Seriously, I know I'm kind of fanboying here, but the car episode that you're also most famous for is the Thelma and Louise analogy, where the car is running out of gas, and you're taking the test drive, and you just keep going and going and going and going. What's your memory of that one? You sat in that car seat, I imagine, for
forever. Yeah, we shot that inside. It was an interior.
Right.
Being inside the car was a bit confining because I like to move my body, but that's okay. We got through that one. That's a good episode. A lot of good episodes. You know, I cover all 9 years.
Yes.
In this book, and I not all of the episodes, but I go for the best of the episodes and show how we put them together, the difficulties and also the big humor that we reached, you know, which we were always after. You know that one.
Of course, yeah. I mean, that those are, and it, so many of them stand the test of time.
You know, I think so.
Except the ones that, you know, are where a cell phone could kind of get you out of trouble, or, you know, even the car episode. Like now you take a look at your app and you'd see your GPS where your car is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yeah. They stand the test of time. Absolutely hilarious. You know?
Yeah. Netflix, thanks to them
Bringing
all the shows together, of course, and you can watch them in sequence, which is how I watched them. I hadn't watched the shows. Well, probably 70% of them I never watched.
Ever.
That's just the way I am. Yeah, I'd look at them and go, oh, gee, I could do much better than that. You know, okay. Yeah. You won an Emmy for that show. I don't know why. There you have it.
No,
the shows.
I appreciate all the storytelling.
Oh, I know what I was trying to say.
Yes, sir. Yes.
I was just trying to say I hadn't watched the shows, so many of them, and then I sat down with my son, the best dad ever.
Yes.
And we watched all the shows in sequence for about 3 weeks.
Was that to prepare for the
book? I had to do that to get prepared for the book, to watch these episodes and remember so much about putting them together, and then being able to watch them, being so objective. Ah, I so enjoyed the show. I just relaxed and went, this is a really good show. And my son's next to me laughing. So the best son ever.
Yeah. How old's your son?
He's 12.
Okay. So he's completely introduced to this facet of your life through this process.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He's a new generation. He and his friends watch the shows. Yeah. And they like the shows. Yeah.
I mean, it definitely, again, translates for a 12-year-old to enjoy.
They love Newman. They really love Wayne Knight.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, look at this man. He would get angry and then puff his face up. It would be so red. And it looked like he's just going to die. I used to tell Jerry, who would laugh all the time at Wayne, I say, Jerry, don't laugh. Now he's got to do another take. You're going to kill this man. And Wayne says, that's the way I want to go. And I went, phew. Boy, he is really committed to his part. You know? Far more committed than Andy Kaufman. He wouldn't die for his role. Wayne would I'm going to do it even harder now. Be sure that camera's on and catch it.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just talking earlier about if you control the mail, you control information. Is a great line by him, the way he just delivered it. Wayne. Calling broccoli an evil weed. Isn't it great? Right? You're laughing about it, too. It's
yeah,
so good.
Well, it's just so funny watching him. You know, we used to shoot that show in the old Mack Sennett building. That was the first studio out there back then when Sennett was making his comedies.
Yes.
So Wayne and I used to sit around and just talk about Mack Sennett, you know, the great physical comedians and so forth. Anyway, it was just so nice to know that we were doing Seinfeld in a building that's so historic for making comedy, you know?
And making comedy history yourself. What'd you think of the Curb finale? What'd you think of that? Did you see the Curb Your Enthusiasm finale?
I didn't.
You did not?
No.
Are you?
I don't watch television.
Are you aware of what happened in the Curb Your Enthusiasm
What happened?
Finale?
Did somebody... was it funny?
No. First of all, yes, I can confirm.
That's all.
But
let's leave it right there.
But I'm actually honored.
Isn't
that
blow your mind that I haven't watched it?
No. Listen, yes,
and Larry's going. Shh, that. Yeah, that's Michael.
So it was at the end of the Curb series finale. Jerry is in it.
I knew about the tie-in.
Okay, so you know about the tie-in.
Because Jerry had told me about it. I knew about that months ago. He told me what they were going to do.
Yeah.
I just didn't watch it. I just watched the show.
Pulled it off, though.
I'll go watch it now. Forget it. I'm leaving.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Richards, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, they pulled it off. It was a great tie-in and a great way to end it and sort of, you know, get a mulligan to use a golf phrase, you know.
I'm happy to hear that.
You know, for all of that. So why'd you write the book, Michael? Why'd you write it?
It's... I mean, why does the hair grow on the top of my head?
No,
or why
right.
am I breathing? I mean, it's just, I started reviewing writing one day about the show.
Right.
And then it started to open up, and I remembered so much, started watching the show, and it got me into writing a book about Seinfeld, especially the development of Kramer, because there's so many fans who are into that character. So I was writing to them to show them the process of making a character like that, being an actor and going into it. And there's an evolution to this character throughout the show. And it's, I thought it would be important for the history of just making comedy on such a show as Seinfeld. So I started there, but then I started to get back into my life. Oh boy, when did I come into acting? Mm-hmm. How did that take a hold of me? And then before that, and then after Seinfeld, and oh, the horrible incident at the Laugh Factory. Mm-hmm. And who am I now? And where did that take me? And so it became a memoir.
And it's available where everybody can get books. Jerry Seinfeld with a beautiful foreword as well. So my last question for you is, in watching back Seinfeld and watching back the episodes, which one that you saw and you're like, I've got to put that in the book, and why?
Oh my gosh. There's a lot of episodes.
Yes.
Okay. I talked about when I first came into physical comedy, Larry had written a big speech for me, which usually goes to Jason or Julia. And I got the speech, and I said to Larry, why come into the room and talk about what I just did? Why don't we shoot what I did? And this was when I went into a laundromat and put powdered cement in a washing machine to get revenge. And rather than come in and I'll tell you, I did this. I put the powder in the washing machine. I said, let me do it. And the director at the time thought, we're not going to have time to do that. And then Jerry says, no, let's do it. We'll do it as a playback. They let me set the scene up and do this physical comedy, and it went over well. It worked. And from then on, I think that was the beginning where we started to look at Kramer now doing physical comedy on the show. That was very important to me. Rather than just saying funny, I wanted to do funny. And I just have the means for it. My body and what I am into. Physical comedy is just making people laugh through your body is funny to
me. And were you the one who came up with Cosmo for Kramer or no?
Oh, we thought for weeks on that one. And then Larry came up to me, goes, I got it. It's Cosmo. And the moment I heard it, I went, absolutely. Well, it turned out it was with us all the time because there was a kid who lived in the building where Larry lived with Kenny, right mm-hmm. down the hall, who was named Cosmo. So you see, it was in us all the time, in a sense, certainly with Larry,
right,
to bring it our way.
It made complete sense.
Yeah, it's not something Cosmo.
Yeah, I know.
Because he is Cosmo.
And you could slip right back in the voice, too.
Yeah, I think so.
I noticed that right there. And last one, the Merv Griffin set episode.
Yeah.
When you first read that, what did you think when you first read that script?
Oh, it's perfect Kramer, because Kramer, he lives in his imagination. And now he gets to be a talk show host. And he believes he is a talk show host. That's what's so lovely about Kramer. His imagination is, well, what's ever on, he can play different characters. He is those characters. So he's on the Merv Griffin show, and he's a talk show host.
Look at this scene right here. I mean, just like the photograph that we have here of you sitting right there with your cards.
Oh, I loved it. I dressed him up. I had him go as a talk show host. It was lovely.
And then welcoming everybody in, playing the music as well. Oh my gosh.
Oh yes, indeed. He really is a talk show host.
Was Merv Griffin alive at that point?
God, I don't know, but he sure had a big house out in Beverly Hills. Man, I flew over that thing. I go, what is that, a bank building? Someone says, that's Merv Griffin's house. I went, whoa, boy, he is feeling like he made it.
That's it. No doubt about it.
He built it from the, I don't know, from the
Jeopardy,
sidewalk
from
up.
From Jeopardy up,
oh, yes,
I think.
Of course,
for sure.
Show to show.
Entrances and Exits, Michael Richards, right here on The Rich Eisen Show. Everybody should get this book where all books can be acquired. Thanks for strolling down memory lane here. This has been a blast.
Man.
Absolutely.
Michael,
thank you.
Did you ever think about putting legs on the back of the book?
I didn't hear what he said.
Do
what?
You ever think about putting legs on the back of the book and making it its own?
Would that make it too gimmicky?
No, it would fit very well. Maybe you should do that.
I'd rather see it as a hood ornament.
Right there, everybody. Check it out where all books are sold. Michael Richards, everybody, here on the Rich Eisen Show.
We'll
be back to wrap it up in a sec.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/westwoodone.
Can you tell me the story, the famous story of you noticing John Candy in the crowd before that 2 minute drill with the Bengals?
Harris Barton was a people person, so yes. We were free for dinner during the week, but you know, practice and meetings, and then come back after dinner and more meetings. So when he would come back from dinner, he was like a little kid. He could not wait to tell you about all the celebrities he saw while he was at dinner. And so we were just standing there, and between the tight end and his shoulder was framed John Candy.
And in the crowd.
He was on the sideline.
Oh, he's on the sideline.
And so I sat there and I looked and I go, dang, I don't remember Harris saying he saw John Candy.
This is what you're thinking in the Super Bowl with minutes to go and needing to drive down the field.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, so I walked over and said, hey, H, man, there's John Candy. And Harris stood like this for 8 minutes, perfectly still. He was a little bit anal that way. He would not move. He was like little. I didn't do it to unwind him. I just thought he would appreciate seeing John Candy.
Did you ever meet Candy, or that was the only time?
Yeah, no, I had met John a few years before that. My contract was up.
Okay.
And he was, you know, one of the owners of the Toronto Argonauts.
Okay.
He was trying to get me to go to Canada.
Come on.
Yeah. They just didn't have enough money.
But if the price was right,
I might have been wearing an Argonaut uniform.
Yeah, you'd have a 55-yard line. You'd be like, I'll do that. So he legitimately said, you know, hey. You know.
Yeah, we had a couple meetings about it. Yeah.
You did. So this is real. Like, it wasn't oh, by the way.
No.
Wow, I love that. Hey guys, Joe Montana is 68 years old today.
Whoa.
Joe Montana is 68. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I am sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. All right, so we're now halfway through the Seinfeld cast showing up here.
I love it.
We are halfway through. We will not rest until we complete the mission.
Wait it. I love it. Let's do it.
We will not rest until we complete the mission. If you want to throw Wayne Knight in there too, let's try that.
We've had Banya on the show before.
That's right, a long time ago.
Let's get Jackie Childs.
It's a Festivus miracle.
Jackie Childs.
Oh my gosh. It's a fest. I could ask about Festivus. You want to talk about feats of strength. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, you
want to
talk about someone we could have done a whole three hours with.
I mean, the same thing with Jerry.
Yeah.
So we've had Larry, Jerry, and Kramer. And we got more to go. More to go.
Well, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, the door is open.
Oh, well, I mean.
Come on in.
For sure. So during that conversation, what happened with Kristaps Porzingis, Christopher?
Okay, I don't know exactly what this injury is, but here's what it's called. The Celtics have announced that he suffered a torn medial alcolum, allowing a dislocation of the posterior tibialis tendon. There's an L in there.
Tibialis
tendon in his left leg. At 3:27 of the third quarter, Joe Mazzulla called it serious, and that it's a rare injury. Thank you. His availability for upcoming games will be determined day to day.
Hala pula viati.
We have now we have come up with a new segment. Chris Brockman tries to read off different body part
Porzingis
names.
Spoke a minute ago. said he doesn't know what the risk of re-injury would be. Said he can't trick the medical staff into letting him play if they don't think he's ready. Quote, but I will try.
I guess this is just the finals version of the Eastern Conference Finals, which is don't have to play him again potentially, or you don't have to play him. If you're beating your opponent, you don't have to play him. So if you sit him in game three, and see if you come up with the dub.
Metrics with him on the court are much better when he's not on the court. He's plus 25 in the series.
Yeah, I get it.
I would prefer that he was out there.
No, obviously.
So we'll see.
But
Also something about Luka. He got a shot in his chest to numb the pain. You know, he was suffering from
it's thoracic.
Yeah, thoracic contusion.
Thoracic Park.
He got a painkilling injection before game two to numb the area of his thoracic contusion. Expectation that he will get another one before game three.
Okay.
Cortisone or?
I don't know.
He's an expert in getting shots.
Sorry, you got lost feelings. I know you got lost.
Yeah, cortisone injections can slow it down.
I just one of my superpowers is I don't need a shot to feel numb. Just numb to a lot.
I've become just comfortably numb.
Just my soul.
Yeah. By the way, injury update. Did you hear we got an injury update on Joe Burrow's wrist?
Oh, no.
Yes, an injury update on Joe Burrow's wrist. And this is big. This is big. If I'm a Bengals fan, I would listen up to this. Here it is. For Joe Burrow here on our program, a wrist update. On the quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, we're gonna travel a little bit, learning how to play the piano. So that's always fun. Just YouTube videos. Yeah, it's been a fun process.
How far along are you with the piano? Getting any better repertoire songs?
Got a couple songs I can play. Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, so he's good.
If he's playing the piano,
no.
I'm assuming it's not just with his left hand. You know what I mean?
One-handed piano, that'd be kind of tough.
I don't know.
I want to know what songs he's playing.
Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Huh?
Chopsticks.
Well, it takes two hands. So, heart and soul, maybe. Just start with the beginning. Start with the beginning. So that's what's up with the Bengals.
Okay, that's good. I saw it said he'd be ready for week one.
Yeah.
He added that in there.
He'll be ready for
it. I was concerned that that's
learning how to play the piano and he's using, you know, he's pointing and clicking on YouTube videos to learn how to play the piano, I think he's good.
Okay.
Rehab process. He starts, you know, playing Tchaikovsky. You know,
rehab
all
Tchaikovsky?
Of a sudden he's Ludwig van Burrow.
Definitely with chopsticks out there.
You know?
Do, do, do.
Okay.
Can you guys play the piano?
No.
Absolutely. I can get 1 point off of Leonard Bernstein if I had him. That's what I'm saying. That's a wrap.
Every story eventually comes to an end. This June, hear the final episode of season 2 of the hit podcast series In the Red Clay, Durham. In the Red Clay tells the unbelievable true story of Billy Sunday Burt, the most dangerous man in Georgia history. In the podcast that people are calling riveting, incredibly moving, captivating, and addicting. Binge seasons 1 and 2 of In the Red Clay now, wherever you listen.